Okay, I am going to introduce David Larson. I am very excited. This is truly the grandest larceny in the history of poetry readings. All right. How in the world can I introduce David Larson? David Larson is one of the most original and energetic poets I know, and so, like many in whom these qualities are concentrated, he makes work that doesn't just defy easy categorization, but often resists comprehension. Even his celebrated translation of the 10th century lexicographic work, Names of the Lion, is not what most critics have believed it was, at least not exactly. I think it's fair to say that David's career has followed two trajectories, twinned and entwined, but also separable. As a poet, David's work is marked by an exuberant devotion to forms, which he variously embraces, exhausts, and subverts, and also by its congenial state of perpetual interruptedness. It situates itself always in the middle of something going on, thought after thought, splitting itself in half so the next one can emerge. He is a poet of daily life, considering how we live together and apart, how we make and skirt meaning, how to do the things that somehow, inevitably, ever arisingly again need doing. He's a poet of the kitchen, the stairwell, and he's a poet of the heavens and the earth, asking weird, beautiful questions like, what makes a pine, and why does the devil have such bad taste in hats? When Faux Press put out his debut collection, The Thorn, 15 years ago, Publishers Weekly called it obsessive, super intelligent, highly promising work, and often beautiful. This is like calling pizza cheese-covered, affordable, available, and often delicious. They had barely scratched the surface of the obvious. The other strand in David's career is his work as a translator and academic, specializing in pre-modern Arabic. His best-known work in this regard is Names of the Lion, first published in a hand-sewn edition in 2009 by Michael Cross's pre-Compline Press, Atticus Finch, and republished in 2017 by Wave Books. It won the Academy of American Poets Harold Morton Landon Translation Award. Names of the Lion is quite literally a lexicon of classical Arabic euphemisms for lions produced. Oh, I should just say, introducing David, there's going to be a lot of Arabic words I don't know how to pronounce. I really apologize if I'm butchering a language you have a connection to. Names of the Lion is quite literally a lexicon of classical Arabic euphemisms for lions produced by the Persian scholar Ibn Khalawai in 10th century Aleppo. Like Holloway, who once gouged a rival scholar in the face with a key, not like him in that sense, but like Holloway otherwise, David is a non-native Arabic speaker, interested in Arabic as a shaper and transmitter of human thought, and in the intellectual hierarchy spawned by it, and in the palimpsest of dramas that collectively comprise a social world where all of this is possible. David's version of Names of the Lion, presented with extensive notes and sometimes derivational conjectures overlaid on the original text, has some affinities with the Assyriologist Ola Wickender's concept of etymological poetics. It creates almost a Mandelbrot litany or a poem that in the spirit of deep image writing might be called deep idea. Most of all, I like to think of it as a sort of lexicon novel whose true protagonist goes entirely undescribed. Who is that protagonist? Like the speaker of many of David's poems, a mensch disguised as a diva, an intellectual too deeply ensconced in knowledge to be bothered performing a relationship to it, a cracked troubadour who will improvise a crown of get off my lawn sonnets just to draw us closer to the house. Thanks, Anna. But I worry this will all sound vague. Let me make it real for you. In one of his poems, David writes, "The devil loves to caper, the devil loves to leap about. Satan is the devil that makes error beautiful. He makes us glad to miss and skews our aims. Pinching my clay, he maketh me." So there it is. A madman is on the loose, having recently devoured the Library of Alexandria and full of piss about the absolute last thing you'd imagine. David, too, loves to caper, aware that true comedy is often the most devastating mode, uncowed by the rigors of erudition, drunk on convergence till he comes out the wrong side of stigma. There's so much more I want to say. I once heard David call himself a one-time Bay Area coterie poet, and I have always loved that and never known what it meant. I want to say that David's blog is fantastic and lives at paintedlantern.blogspot.com. Please check it out. I want to say that David's translated chapbooks also include lightning scenes from Wave Books and Abu Amir al-Fadl ibn Ismail al-Jurjani's poem about the cat, published by Ugly Duckling Press. I want to say that David has been, in my mind, present throughout this segue season because the couch where I sit when I do these things has a David Larson poem hanging on the wall right over it. I want to say that my personal favorite Name of the Lion from Names of the Lion is Al-Mikdam, who seeks the forefront of battle, which, and I quote, could without violence be translated as the avant-garde. I want to say David Larson is among my favorite people in the world, and I want to implore you urgently to go internet crazy and give the warmest possible internet welcome to David Larson.
Aw, thank you, Ian. That's the best introduction ever, and it was all true except for you got the diva and Mensch backwards. believe me. Okay, well, I would like to begin, there's many people passing away. I had thought to mention Michael McClure, who was just a couple days ago, and then this morning, Little Richard died. And it's not a contest, but I know who's taught me more. So, this one's for Little Richard. I would like to begin today's reading with some poems from a treatise I just translated by Jalal ad-Din Asuyuti, who died in 1505. This was actually at Eugene Dostoevsky's prompting. He said he thought he could get me published. Well, I proved him wrong. This is a treatise called A Tarthuth to Fawa'id al-Burhuth, which basically means on the benefits of the flea. It's all about fleas. It's a humorous work. And I'm just going to read a few poems from it. No one wants to hear me read the Arabic. I'll just blast through this. They're all short little ditties. First one's by Majd-ed-Din Abu Maimun al-Kinani, who was a governor under Salah ad-Din. It's a kind of a riddle, and it goes like this. I speak of a community whose massacre is no crime. And for them, even a pilgrim's blood is fair game. But when I spill their blood, the blood on my hands is my own. Ibn Kathab al-Marj, 14th century, up in Upper Egypt. To whom may I complain of the flea? Oh, my people. Its unjust spilling of my blood keeps my eyes from closing. Like a lion, it pounces, never ceasing until I am pierced and stripped like prey. When the attack commences, I bear it bravely, but once they go in my ear, I lose my mind. This one's by Abu Layna, a 9th century ascetic from Basra. But he's talking about Baghdad. My night in Baghdad was long. Whoever bunks in Baghdad spends a long night without sleep. It is a city where, at the end of the day, the blue-black flea hops singly and in pairs with the gray belly like a postman's mule turned loose at a manger. So that's Baghdad. Here's Cairo, described by a Bedouin named Abu Ramih al-Asadi, maybe 8th century. You start to see the theme here. Fleas are a city problem. And that's where I live. I spent a long night at Fustat. Not once at Hinwa al-Ghada did I endure a night so long. Kept awake by the pitiful little hunchbacks plaguing me, the pitiful one was I. I spent part of the night in search of new quarters, but they moved where I moved or clung to me. When we tried killing them, they only multiplied, and we were not the killers of a single one. If only I'd known, would I have stayed the night? And fleas had not gained access to my person. This is Ibn al-Falsi, a poet of Damascus, 12th century. To what may fleas be likened more than mottled vipers of the desert floor? Many a long night have I been kept awake, sleepless until morning, my mind racing at each bad surprise. By an army of fleas, I was harried to the point of death as I hunched in darkness. It was as if the surface where my bed is made were strewn with briars outspread. If you could see my isolation in the dark, by each one of them mistreated and left upon with violence, regard mine eyes. They've gone opaque, their lids peeled back by sleeplessness. Back to Baghdad now with Abu Shamakmak, a pauper of the city, 8th century. Oh, live long day and live long night, the fleas made sport of me. Among them is a hungry female flea who plants her flag in the hole of my ass. And one last one, even more cartoony, by Anonymous. Gnats and fleas and bedbugs attend me. They think my blood is wine, and rightly so, since my blood alcohol content is so high. So the flea will dance and the gnat will croon as the bedbug tucks in to enjoy the tune. And that's a taste of something that barely gets out in translation, that sort of like cartoony vibe where like the pests and vermin are like dancing around the house of the city poet. And well, that's where I live, so I've really bonded with this corpus of poetry. Now on to the original stuff. And to continue making my name synonymous with pests and vermin, I have a poem that's actually very loving and sad. It's my one-time wife, the late poet Beth Murray, was in many ways ahead of her time. I'm thinking now about her dedication to what we now call animal studies, which is to say animal cognition, human-animal interaction and communication was very important to her. I tried to write something for her on the matter, and instead she deserves a better memorial, but this is what came out. Called The Language of the Fly. Last night I dreamed I learned the language of the fly. Almost all of it is body language. With its noggin in a slick of cheese, it regards you from the cutting board through eyes that don't roll, but they do change shape and the panes change color. The buzzing of the fly is expressive, but it is no voice. There came the day I picked the green fly up from the floor and laid it on the coffee table. Then I threw the table from the house and moved away, and the fly recovered. The human world is hard to enter and hard to leave behind. I'm speaking as a human being, barely hanging on. I thought to defend the fly, speak for the fly, but lo, I cannot. The hungry housefly, because it is hated and killed inside of houses. I don't know what took me all this time, is what you'll say when you find yourself a big fat fly and begin. This next poem, most of my poems have the title in the last line. The title of this one took me a long time. It's called Fair Play for Yemen. And I wrote it for my friend Jonathan Brunn. Oh, and it mentions Uwais. Uwais al-Qarni is the name of a legendary companion of the Prophet Muhammad who never met him in person. The story is they communicated in dreams. And later Sufi tradition thinks of Uwais as a kind of a proto-Sufi of a special sort, the kind of mystic who has no teacher, who needs no teacher, who just sparks up. And any Sufi who comes along like that calls himself an Uwaisi after him. And it's a very, to me, very compelling. After all my years in school, that doesn't mean I was mentored. In the United States, we have something called outsider art. Not in the sense of foreigner, but artist who did not go to school. It is an art term. It is like Uwaisi. You know Uwaisi. It is the most beautiful thing. No facts about the man, just tales of abject holiness, a tutelary figure for the teacherless. In every village, there should be. Uwais contracted leprosy and beat it back till just a coin-sized patch remained. The companion of the prophet who never met him but in dreams. He fought and died a couple places. Mausoleas stand for him all over. No! The Caliph Omar leapt from his seat. Find him if you can and make him pray for me. A joint pet project of Ayatollah Khomeini and Hafez al-Assad, the Uwais al-Qarni Mosque in Raqqa got blown up just last year. Spray painted on it, whoever has no sheikh, his sheikh is Satan. I hate those people. and the mullahs, and the stupid kingdom, and the arms dealing, good life stealing, United States of malignant bullshit, most of all. We need to rescue every artist in the countryside, their children and their wares, and together we will hold a sign, and we will make it say, fair play for Yemen. This was inevitable, whichever. This is repertoire. Its title comes from a book I've never read, but it's bound to be my favorite. It's from, I believe it's a history, and it's from the Ming Dynasty, and its title means Required Reading for the Geniuses of the World. I read this thing. It made me so mad that I sat up all night long. It was written with a pen held backwards, so to speak. I put it in my cabinet, brooded on it. My irritation summited and made me hot. And when I took it out again, everything had changed and betrayed new meanings. And anger flooded me again. I hopped and hit my hand. I felt like a skid mark. God damn it, I was God's skid mark in the painted desert, swam before my eyes, required reading for the geniuses of the world. This is more repertoire. I wrote this after here's like a little riddle. It was a party on my birthday, but it wasn't my birthday party. It's called The Bohemian of the Family. Just get divorced. It's much more urbane. The shit is pathetic. Kids are for lames. Your parents are lames. That's why they had you. Lameness is the state or condition where you can't walk around without a brat at your heels or a husband bawling fan de poem. and this is, you know what, actually, here's the theme. I wrote this one after a party too, or maybe it was a reading. I don't know. It's another family poem. It's called Hey Grandma, title from the song by Moby Grape, but it really is to my grandma. This one's for you, Grandma. Hey, Grandma. I've got something God gave you to give to me. I love my mom, but my mom never pulls all-nighters. She gets herself to bed. Her work can wait until tomorrow. If it doesn't turn out, she sets it aside. My mom is the absolute best, and that is not the way me and my grandma did and do. And another one, I wrote this, I creepy crawled the Stanford campus one night, and I didn't get caught, and I was having fun. Actually dedicated to my friends. I know they're out there. Dave, I see you. Did you really? What the fuck? Even in these tunnels, don't risk it. Buy a ticket. Oh, I see. You don't have a Jewish bull god in your life with smoke coming out both nostrils. I see also that your company lacks a Dakota haystack who leaps the foam. In fact, you don't have anybody, and you don't have shit to say. I'm a godsend, and so are you, with a big difference. I know the lesson of Napoleon's hat. That poem's called Napoleon's Hat. And now I'd like to do a little... in the dotage of my last summer, I wrote a couple of songs. I wrote a few songs actually, but here's the two that I would do. This first one, I'm gonna dedicate this to my friend Julian, because this is a little an attempt at sort of like a country rock sort of thing, but I'm just going to do it bel canto style. Oh, did I mention it's called gourd flower? From the trellis outside the stable, I picked for you this gourd flower and set it in my hair to see me through. I admit it, 'twas you I picked for that poor flower. On my honor, I snapped a crucifix in two. I'm not the only rootin', tootin', scootin', whatever I am. So don't ask me again, or I'll tell you my plan. Passing through the snow was never gonna happen for our gourd flower. When hickory fills the air and trees are blue, until I see you on the boulevard of roses, good flower, my flower of mourning for you. Backup music would just ruin that. This one too. This one's called The Sun. It's a little more up tempo. Waking up not dead is an excellent goal. Why else would we go wherever we go? The sunlight's our way. Without it, there'd be nowhere to go and nothing to see. For everything you know, you can thank the sun. Death and hell are with us always. The full moon only once in 30 days. The outer planets don't concern us, except in subtle agricultural ways. The sky is nice, but most of it is empty space. The hero that we count on is the sun, is the sun, is the sun. On her people shining, the finger pointing at the moon, well, that's the sun. The moon is lazy. The moon is late. The waxen moon has clouds it cannot penetrate. If you want to find the onyx in a field of rocky scree, then the light you need to see by is the sun's, not some planet bird brain, the body that we orbit, the divinity we owe it to, the power and the glory are the sun's. All right. Everybody got their Prosecco? Oh, whew. Seriously, wait for this. I have a tea light here too, but there's nowhere to put it. Oh, you got one too? Tea light? Oh, a pineapple? What is that? Oh, I have a little cactus. I love it. Mine tastes better. This next poem, I'm attached to it. I mean, it's a little messed up. I lived in Columbus, Ohio for like 1 year. I know Central Ohio has its own poets and its own scene, and I did not reach out, and I just stayed in the short north and worked my ass off. It was just a very private time. And so here's a poem about it. Really, the reason now to love it is that it has place names in it, and I can't go anywhere, so I miss names of places. Or, I mean, I enjoy the names while I'm missing the places themselves. Maybe a little piece of information that would help is that the Namara inscription, dated to 328 of the Common Era, used to be regarded as the earliest inscriptive evidence for the language we now call Arabic. That's been pushed centuries back now, but It's at the Louvre, so why don't I shut up? My day at the Louvre was a blur. I threw myself on the Nomada inscription and wailed like Gimli the dwarf. Then I was in Amsterdam, where a friend commanded that I write the wicked poem about my night-long ramble in that city. But really, I was in Columbus, oh, where the bus drops you off at the Sheet Music Store and picks you up at the bar. Its pavings are the opposite of Cambridge, Mass., whose streets are tar and sidewalks are a red brick mess. How nice for wheelchair users, by the way, and there was a neighborhood turkey. Now, I've moved around a lot. Shipped trunks around before they made me. Highway 50 goes through Nevada with no water for 100 miles. But in Columbus, I wound up for quite a spell. I lived in a church like the cast of Black Flag. An extension cord ran out the back door, and after it, I ran daily. Cincinnati was a blur, and Pleasant Point, my friend, what happened? I cracked my teeth on the roof of the world, and there is some place I want to be forever. Is it weird to feel closer to a friend when texting from a tavern out of state? It depends on which friend? Good, because I learned a lot in Columbus. My character is essentially bad. True manhood is patience with other men, and well, your servant revels in his faults today. There was laughter, and there still is. There was snow, and then there wasn't. I mailed pamphlets, postcards, things of that nature. Woo! Columbus! I came along when I needed you so I could write the wicked poem that was called The Rat's Thanksgiving, but the gods of poetry call it Columbus O. Thank you. I don't know. Now I got a couple of more like, well, you know, I'm a slow writer, but I got a couple of things from Coveroni era. This first one begins with a line from The Tempest. Act one, scene one. Come, play the man. You and I share a head, boy. Bodybuilding is a non-starter, but it could be a beginning. No actor can play me. What would you smash his face in with? You and I pass below the same building's shadow. Don't forget. That's the chronic, darling. You're talking all that bullshit about the thorn that tore your coat off, flinging it to the sky. We've been around this block. So many capable hands around me call it the way and show it to so few, darling. When you read this, you will hear it. Gotta go. Kissing rocks are beautiful and zeros are hollow. Still, you and I fill up our cans from the same nozzle. And, this one's real recent. The title comes from also from the Flea Treatise, which mentions a proverbial expression, La af'aluhu hatta yahujul burhuth, which means, I'll do it when the flea goes on pilgrimage. It's like saying when hell freezes over. It means I'm not going to do it. It's never going to happen. Because the flea never goes away. And it starts with a rhyme. A little courage on. Day one was for the sun. Day two, the moons. All day three is master twos. Odin's day and Thor's. Eat up two more. And fucking then Friday, I know, but this day is for the weekend king. Who throve in the boot forest where the thunder drave him out to populate his tummy. The more I think about it, I should be open to more things. But there are no believers in a flat Saturn. Scientific wonders never cease. paying me visits. Put them all together, and what do they spell, by all means? How would I know if I was going insane? I want to have a torrid affair. Just kidding. I want to move miles inland into a domed lodge with a surrounding dam. How deep is your cover? When it's over, you can tell me. I will listen. But if you go out without your keys, as sure as God made buzzing insects, I will murder you! There's a first time for everything. Even lying on this scummy floor, wishing good feelings could be trusted, but some things will never be. Like the flea's pilgrimage. Sounds good to me. Peekskill, Poughkeepsie, Saugerties. Frozen sunshine on the west bank, liquid sunshine on the right. Everywhere, the landscape says, you are looking at me for a reason. Forget that reason and let the line go free. It's not as if the cat you fed last summer got up in the wintertime to feed you ham. Bad news, fake killers become real ones. The different is not the other. The different could be your twin. Some men are so beautiful, it becomes a problem. And they mask their faces. That's how beautiful the other is. When you awaken from a dream, still clutching the apple from when I was going to buy groceries, but stayed in and took a bath. The thing about the needle in the haystack is a horse might die in agony and kick the barn down. Will you find the needle quick? The hay is there. The quartz beneath the ground pulses to the beat of round Saturn, leaving no way between for me to thread. A feline Casanova, apple-scented, fuck the neighbors! You can't evict me! Don't they know what today is? Day one was for the sun. Day two, the moon. The rest of the week, I can barely get through. And so we hail Saturn. His is the day. I smoke till I'm simple and drink till I sway. All right, one last one. Which, continuing the tradition, yes, I wrote it after a long poetry reading / party. Actually, you know what? It was Rodrigo Toscano. I heard him in San Diego. I don't know if you heard Rodrigo lately, but he's on fire. And I even pulled over on my bike. Oh, which I was about to show off, but I spilled water on my power strip. It's cool. But my wheels are right here. Right in front of me. Economizing on space. And the poem is called The Palm. And a rare thing for me, it begins with an epigram from, his name's Ibn Rumi, who flourishes in the 10th century. Not the well-known Rumi, but, you know, Ibn Rumi, he writes in Arabic. And here's how his epigram begins. A palm grove is slow to give back to the planter, but a happy return is assured when the leaves start to show. Time sustains the palm when other stumps wither. In a race against wheat, the palm is the winner. Side by side they stand, the burnt and the spared. Along the roadway I traveled on to go be mommy's friend. Look at the stairs I used to fall down. Another bad swallow coming back around. When I blew doors, there was less damage to the ceilings and their floors. I'm gonna smoke and ride tonight. Another line driven from my mind by these ones, unrepeatable. Try them and see. I made a poetry tonight, and I don't think it's just me when I plunge in tonight, and every tree visible is. It's the palm. Thanks.